This podcast is a Uniting Heart and Soul production and was recorded on land that was stolen nearly 250 years ago. Filthy Hope was conceived and dreamt on Gadigal and Birrabirragal country, and this episode was recorded on Durramurrugal country. We acknowledge these peoples as the traditional owners of these lands and extend our respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. We at Filthy Hope pay homage to the traditions of storytelling when we share stories on this podcast. Hello and welcome back to Filthy Hope, a podcast from Uniting Heart and Soul in Woollahra, where we dive into the grey spaces where Jesus, life and culture intersect. I'm your host, Jonty, Creative Director at Uniting Heart and Soul, and joining me this week is Tash Holmes. Tash is a key person in the Uniting Church in spaces of music and creativity. Rev Ness is still away on leave, but we do look forward to having her back on the podcast very soon. For those who are joining us for the first time, myself and Rev Ness from Uniting Heart and Soul have been having candid and frank conversations about faith that accepts and coexists with the realities and complexities of life. And in this most recent run of episodes, we've been extending that conversation to artists to hear how their faith interacts with their artistry. Please enjoy episode 29 of Filthy Hope. Should do an official welcome to the podcast. Depending on where I edit this, we may have been talking for a little while. So welcome to the show, Tash.
Thank you, friend.
Who are you, Tash Holmes? Can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Oh man, I hate that question. It's like, who am I? Is it about like am or what I do, or where do you start?
So what do you do?
Thank you.
Narrow it down for you, yeah.
What do I do? So currently I work for United Mission and Education, which is the, what is it, New South Wales ACT arm of the Synod. I work for the Mission Enablement Team, and I work in a space that is bringing new music, I guess, is mainly the thing. It was like bringing creative people together across all the different complex spaces of the United Church. That's what I do for work. But outside of that, I also do some tutoring sometimes. I work in school sometimes. Lots of different things, working around like connecting to lyric and all that sort of stuff in schools if they need help with groups and performance. So last year I worked in a school, they were starting a glee club, and they were like, our kids in the band and in the choir, they don't look like they're actually this. So they're like, can we like start a whole other group and just ruffle them up, just get them moving, get them, you know, kind of engaging with the different songs and that sort of stuff. So we did that last year. It was really cool. So I love doing that work where they're like, we don't know what to do with these people. And they all come in and my goal is to crack them. Like, how do I get to the heart of this group, of these kids? And, yeah, I love what comes out of those things. So.
Almost like
perfect place of it.
Yeah.
Taking a bit longer to crack them, though.
Yeah, well... We just chatted for a while about that beforehand as well. Yeah. So you're a musician.
Yep.
Take me through, I know you sing and play guitar. Is there anything else in your repertoire that you do?
So I play, I guess, piano and keys, guitar, percussion. I do love percussion. I haven't played it for a long time, but that mainly came out of those places where you go and there's no drama. And then eventually I was like, I'll stuff this. I'm just going to get a djembe and I'm going to work it out. And luckily, like, the rhythm stuff comes really naturally to me, so I picked that up really, really easy. Now, the other challenge about singing and playing djembe on time, which over time I've grown to be able to do that too, but I think that's mainly it. And vocals, that sort of fun stuff, yeah.
Yeah, cool. I've had to jump on the drums at church a couple of times when we've just been doing the drummer. Apologies to anyone that was there.
This is my moment.
Yeah. As long as I'm going to sing at the same time, I'm fine.
It's pretty impressive. When you see those real drummers and singing at the same time, like I wouldn't be able to do that, I don't think.
No. The coordination involved is just, yeah. Yeah. I struggle just to get the hands moving in the right place.
Yeah.
So take me back to when you were younger. How did you first discover music? So, like, were you in a musical family? Did your parents play music? Yes. What was that like?
Yes, it was. My dad was music. So, when he grew up with music, he was a music teacher. He started teaching us music from when we were, like, I don't know, born. I think we just kind of came out and then straight to music lessons. So every night we would have to do guitar lessons, keyboard lessons, like recorder is the other thing that
we
were playing. So I got two other sisters and we had to, learn all the songs in the different parts, and then we would have to perform that at church and at dad's Christmas parties. I wish if a genie popped out and said, you've got one wish, I wish that I could see the footage of that, because that would have been hilarious. All these people just boozing up, having a great time at the Christmas party, and there's three of us in the corner playing Christmas carols on the recorder. I'd probably pay to see that now. definitely grow up. My dad was a writer and my dad was super creative, so we would get involved with all of the things to do with church stuff, like musicals. He would write songs and we would have to sing them, and back then, it wasn't so great all the time, but now I look back and I go, gosh, I can see how all of those things have just meant that now I have a very natural, like, it's in me rather than, like, feeling like I have to do this thing. It's just sort of, like, is very much a part of who I am,
And so you mentioned you grew up going to church as well. I'm imagining music was a big part of going to church for you.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that and what that was like?
That was in the Baptist church. So my family are from England. So they came over and came back and forth from England to Australia before deciding that they were going to settle here. So very, very, very conservative. I think my parents were part of the Church of England, and that was a really conservative church. And now I think they probably would look back on that and call it a bit of a cult. It was kind of that kind of level. So when they came over, we were part of the Baptist church. My memories of it, I think it was quite a thriving church. There was lots of, like, they had, like, trumpets and all sorts. Like, there was just lots of stuff going on. There's always things up in the hall. There was always some musical, or someone was, there was just a lot of really big, thriving things going on at the time. So apart from school and everything, I think church was pretty much our whole world back then.
And at what point, and I'm trying to get an idea of how this was for you as a young person, were you sucked into taking part in the music at church, because for me it was super young. It was like, oh, you play an instrument.
Yeah.
Stage. Like, was that similar for you, or was it much more of a gradual thing, or?
I can remember. I think it was probably as soon as my dad started getting involved, then we would get involved. So if he was doing something, we would usually be singing with him and that sort of stuff. I don't have any memory of being part of the other, like the people that I kind of have some memory of looking at from, you know, the congregation to them. I don't have any memory of doing things with them.
Right.
But I only have memories of doing stuff with dad, so there must have been at some point, we must have been on a roster or something. Yeah, but good times.
And so as you grow older, there was a point in my life for me where I suddenly realized, oh, you know, I'm actually decent at some of this music stuff. I'm going to make a decision that that's something that I want to pursue, whether that, like, you're not old enough at that point to decide I'm going to be a professional musician, but you're like, I'm going to keep learning the piano, or I'm going to pick up the guitar, or was there a moment or a decision for you at any point growing up where you were like, music, something that I'm actually really passionate about and something I'm going to continue doing?
Yeah, well, I think it always came very naturally to me, and even like vocally, I can remember like learning about harmony and all those sorts of things, and that kind of, I think because we played recorder as well, so you're always playing in parts, so it was really good for the ear. Mm. So when it came to doing more of that stuff, that came very naturally, and I actually just really loved it. I think it brought, because those were the gifts that I had, it kind of was the beginning of those coming to life. So connecting with that and kind of feeling like, okay, that must be my thing, you know. And then later sort of being upfront and being able to, I don't know, that moment, I don't know if you've had this moment of where you do really kind of resonate with, when you sing a song and when you're doing that thing, how it connects to the other. And it's like this moment of, it's the beauty of creativity and music, isn't it? It's sort of like you're all in this space together, but yeah, it's sort of like everyone has permission to just breathe. You know, like you might not even know a person, but you start singing a song together, and it's just that kind of thing, I think at a very early age, I connected with. So, you know, when it came later to sort of leading worship and doing that sort of stuff, like, I don't know, but there's something really beautiful about being able to draw people into a space, and then, you know, in that space all sorts of things can happen. But I remember resonating with that very young, whether that was, you know, doing stuff on stage and people coming up and sort of commenting on different things, like at a young age. I think it just sort of boosted my confidence, you know, set me on a path.
And what did it look like transitioning to leading worship? Because it's a very, I think, quite a sharp shift in approach and expectation, and how you even think, like, just the very, at a base level, getting up on stage to sing is very different to getting up on stage to lead a group of people in worship. I'm super glad that I've got someone like you on the podcast that has had this transition along the way as well. How did you find that transition, and how did you think about it then? How maybe has that changed for you over time? Like, what does that look like for you?
I don't have any memory of leading worship in the Baptist church. So I think that was just a family thing. My memory of leading worship, I think, came more in high school, and then definitely going into Hillsong. So I think Hillsong probably was where that vaccine was a thing, you know, whereas before it was like, oh, we're mainly just, you know, singing these songs at the front and people are invited to join in. But shifting from that and that sort of Pentecostal thing coming in sort of at the end of high school, and then people were getting really, oh, like, this is a thing, you know, like the nightclub of the Christian world. Everyone's sneaking off to get a Hillsong. That was a real, like, complete shift of, like, moving from, no, you know, leading worship is definitely almost instructing people how to worship, you know, as you're leading them. But there's so many interesting bits in that space, isn't there? Because there's the way that people lead and the way that they're taught to lead in those spaces. But then because of that, people sort of have permission to let go of it, you know?
It's almost like they opt into being told what to do, but then the result of it is people do move, people do clap, people do dance. We've got, you know, it just sort of like watching that. Even though there were things about it that later on I'm like, I don't know how I feel about that anymore. But I do think when it comes to leading from the front, there's ways of being able to bring.
And that kind of ties back to that first part for me of, like, you know, being able to draw people into a collective space. Something magical about that, you know, sort of, you know, I mean, you would know, like, when you're leading a song
and then there's that moment where, you know, people are just singing, maybe there's just voices in a room, or I don't know, like, and everyone individually is kind of connecting to God in whatever way they are, but collectively we're doing it together. I don't know, there's something really cool about that.
Totally. And I think I used to, this has changed for me over time, I used to think that, like, the purpose of worship was to direct everyone in the room upwards. Whereas I actually think it's more, for me, the way I think about it now, and I think this resonates with my experience a little bit more, is that when you're leading worship and when you're taking part in worship and when you're in a space where worship is happening really well, we're actually just being more open to the presence of God
in the
space with us, as opposed to looking to some external place where God might be looking down on us or whatever, you know.
Yes.
Which I think is tied a lot to cultural ideas of God's up in the clouds somewhere.
Wait, God's not in the clouds?
Playing badminton with the angels or whatever. But
Just blow the mind, Ben.
Performance for me, like, I had to figure out, because I was getting burnt out a little bit in both spaces for a little while, and I had to figure out that for me, performance is very inwards. And especially when you're performing the same 8 songs on loop, like you learn a show and then you perform it and you take it on the road, you sort of go into yourself a little bit more because people are watching you and they've paid money to see you do a thing, whereas worship and leading worship is much more outward and you have to be very present with the people in the room because, you know, the stereotype of, you know, Pentecostal worship is you play the bridge 16 times or whatever. That's an example of, well, I'm present in this room and I can feel that the Spirit is moving this group of people to this particular lyric. I'm going to stay on that for a little while, for example. How do you feel about that? Because it's something that I flip-flop back and forth on a little bit about. Yeah. And it ties into, like, the ethics of what you're doing when you're leading worship as well. Like, if it's about me performing, then I don't feel comfortable with that, and sometimes as a performer it just sort of slips back into that a little bit, and I don't know, how does that resonate with you?
Like, around what you're talking about in terms of the, like, the painting bridges and doing that sort of stuff,
this bridges to what we'll talk about next about creativity and faith and drawing almost a line between what's performative and what's worship. And is that line even necessary sometimes, I wonder?
Yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? Because it probably ends up coming back to how you would define either of those things, you know, because it's those words, isn't it? It's like worship, performance, like people already have different definitions and experiences of either of those baggage. It's the baggage that's held to those things, I think, that make us go, oh, we can't do that, oh, and we need to be doing that. Whereas surely it's got to come down to what, how we enter into that space as leaders. How, where do we start from that? Like, if we haven't prepared and we haven't come into a space kind of ready to, whatever that word is that you're most comfortable with, ready to serve or ready to lead people into a particular space, if we haven't done that work, then most of the time we're going to be, I would say, vulnerable to then going into automatic pilot around maybe how we would then lead a group into worship. And we want those quick wins, right? We want high energy, we want emotion, we want, you know, and that's where it might be tempting to manipulate that a little bit. But then on the other side of that, coming into a space kind of really anchored into why you're doing this thing and who's in the room and why they're here. I don't know, there's something there that I think would determine which direction it goes into once you're doing that thing. I mean, because, you know, it's a tough space to be in anyway, and when you're busy and when you haven't had time to prep, like, you do feel the difference of when you're doing that thing up there. Yeah, it is a really interesting space, but I think it's got to, like, it's sort of like wherever you start is where you end, right? So we don't start and end things very well, I don't think. More and more increasingly so in most of what we do. It's sort of like a rush start and then the quick end, you know, and then it's the rush start again, the quick end. So we never really develop what we need to do at the start to do that thing really, really well. And also when we're talking about worship, like, without using those particular words, it's kind of it really is any experience that we have together, right? Like, it could be a meeting, a group, or you know, you've got rehearsal, or you've got this, or you've got that. It's all the same thing, really, at the end of the day, around how, you know, that experience and the spirit in the room, you know, like, out. Because it's all in us already, you know, those things. Like, it's not like we're dead robots and then the spirit comes in and then we're hoping the spirit's going to come in and, you know, make this thing something. It's like, it's actually just like the music and all that stuff just activates something that's already in us. And that activation, I guess, as worship leaders, we have to be ready to then nurture that and sort of guide that, you know. I guess we're almost, you know, we've got to model that from the front, right? We've got to figure out how to model that from the front in a genuine, authentic way. And maybe that's the challenge that sometimes we'll get right, sometimes we won't.
Yeah, and learning to not be too hard on yourself when you have that one day when you're just busy and you don't have time to prep. And yeah, because I sometimes
that like, one day. It's yeah. Only for one day.
Yeah, and you feel like a fraud. You're like, oh, everyone knew and I made so many mistakes, but then someone afterwards goes, oh, that was great. And
they yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There are a couple of things that came up out of that I want to touch on. I was thinking someone that does a really, really amazing job of that is Ace Kim. I have been blown away every time I've done worship with him. He does such an amazing job preparing the congregation. Like, he'll spend up to 5 or 10 minutes sometimes just talking to the congregation and going, this is what we're about to do. Here's a piece of scripture to meditate on. Let's think about it. Turn around and talk to some people around you while there's still music playing. And when he feels like the room is in the right space, then we'll start worship, which sometimes I turn up to work and I'm just like, let's just tune up with the power and go.
Yeah.
And it just becomes a little bit repetitive. That was a real challenge, a real good challenge for me to see. Yeah. You can take as long as you want. If they're not ready, you We don't start until we're ready.
Oh, yeah. I love that. I really do. I'm a big fan of speaking out what are we expecting?
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of a thing as well, isn't it? Like, we don't often, but let's be in this together and share. What is it that we're hoping and expecting to get up out of this thing that we're about to do together? Which means that you're bringing people into a space and you're putting them on a pause and you're going, let's take time to be present and be centered. And this is what we're inviting you into. And because then people rise to that. And I love that. I really love that sort of not always expecting the person at the front to be holding the weight of the room, because I think we can, you know, maybe that's something we need to do more of. We can really start to lead in a way that grounds everyone in that we're actually doing this together from the start. Like, you are responsible for your energy in this room when you come into this space. And I just think that could radically shift our worship spaces anyway, because a lot of people come in with, like, what have you got for me?
Yeah.
I like this song. Okay, I'm going to tune in here and then I'll come back at the end. It's like, no, like, imagine if people could just put those preferences aside for the greater thing, the greater cause. And if everyone came into the room ready to go, ready, you know, to engage and be in worship together, like, that would just be a game changer, I think.
Yeah. There's like this, and I encounter this a lot. People getting frustrated because of, oh, you didn't pick the song that I like, or, oh, this tech thing was bugging me, or blah, blah, blah. Like, as if that's a reason to get annoyed at the whole experience. Yeah. It's like, well, no, we're just people.
Yes.
Like getting annoyed at the institution of the church, which I fall into all the time. But at the end of that, like, of course it's not perfect. It's made by people. Like, we're followers of Christ, so we have this expectation of Christendom that is rooted in deep, like, divinity. And we're not Jesus, we're just people. And so this expectation of everything has to be up to the standard that Jesus lays down to us, which is completely unattainable.
Yeah.
Like, and it does frustrate me sometimes when the slightest little thing people get annoyed at. It's like, well, why didn't we do this? Or why didn't this person fix this thing beforehand? It's like, doesn't matter. We're here to worship.
Absolutely. Yeah. All those things should be secondary to the real reason that everyone is gathering in the room. You know, like, if those things, sometimes I put that back on people, like, if those things can throw you so easily, then I have to question why you came in the first place. Because, I mean, I've done my time of sitting there in the company of many hymns and organs, and it's not that I don't appreciate those, but there are other ways that I may prefer to engage in worship. But I always try to remember, like, that's not really the thing, right? If we're not able to kind of have a genuine connection and be able to use that space to, you know, worship God, however way you do it, then, you know, what are we doing? If it's all reliant upon everything going perfect at the front, or the perfect songs at the right time, or the perfect words on the front, then, I mean, just pack it up, because you're never going to get that. So, yeah, I think sometimes we can be spoiled, you know, in the way that we come to these spaces and come to church and come to God. It's like, really, those things are huge luxuries that we have.
Yeah, especially like when you go to smaller churches and they seem to have more engaging and more meaningful worship for smaller communities with like none of the tech and none of the lights and none of the any of that stuff.
Yeah, right. Like,
what's there that's not in that other space where people are annoyed that the lighting cue didn't go at the right time or whatever it is? Like, just
And all those things that are happening in a room, they're all like pushing up against each other, you know. So if you're trying to do something from the front, but you feel like this person down here is like going to hate this song, or that person over there is not going to be happy because the words were wrong on the screen. All those things that are happening is the culture that has been created by us. And it's been created by us, so surely we can shift it back. But it takes that collective, like, okay, we're going to press restart on this thing, because, you know, if we don't, we're just going to burn the whole thing out. Like, just, and we see that happening as well. Like, people going, you know what? Yeah, I'm done.
Yeah. You can go and pay money to go watch a show on a Saturday night and watch professionals do their job. That exists. That's not worship. Like, we got to take part in something that's totally different. You can go and watch, I don't know, whoever, Sam Smith on the weekend and get thing. But that's not what worship is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something else that came up before, and I've now forgotten what brought this up, but this idea that worship and the music part of worship is just an extension of the entirety of community gathering, and that is such a beautiful utopian view of how music interacts with worship that contrasts so heavily with, hey, we've got this event and we've got this speaker and we're going to pay all this money for this guy to come or this girl to come and we're going to have these breakout rooms and blah 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 blah. Oh, but can you do music?
Yeah.
Always seems to be this extra thing that just gets tossed over to the resident musician to sort out.
Yeah.
Whereas I think we agree music is such a huge and integral part of the whole thing. And it's not just this, I mean, it is sometimes, it's this thing that's just tacked on at the beginning and the end.
Yeah.
And I just, it frustrates me because people like non-musicians, but like even people that would like get the most out of worship often aren't musicians. They're people that just go to encounter Christ and take part in worship, and they would say the same. They would say the music is such a valuable part of what worship is.
Yeah.
So why do we separate it from, like, it's almost like it's third or fourth or fifth down on the pile of things that are important in organization and planning and funding and all of these different things. I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but
this is one of the main things that I'm trying to just create more awareness about, that when it comes to like even just a simple couple of songs for an event, we have so many pieces that have to fit together for that to actually be delivered in a way that's meaningful. The tech staff, the songs, the people, the musicians, like all of those, and the rehearsals, the sound checks, a lot of speakers who are paid kind of just rock up usually, 30 minutes, 15 minutes beforehand, and stop everything, we've got to do the mic check for the speaker. Like, that's happened to me so many times, and I've got this massive group of people like that are all here as volunteers, and we're madly trying to do our sound check and get levels right. And let's stop. Go ahead. Just that's just such a common thing that happens. Drives me crazy. I'm trying to learn the word no. Or if people do want things like that for events and stuff, that they actually have to fill out, a request for, and I think that there should be more budget put into that as well, because it's just such a lot of work, and most of the time what I seem to be finding a lot is that whenever there's a conference or event or something, even if the music is down the bottom of their list, it ends up being the thing that makes or breaks a particular experience, it's just... Yeah, and there's always so much great feedback when there's great music. It's sort of like, oh, that was, and then I think, oh, if you pluck that out and pull that over there, what would have been left? Because there's that too. Sometimes they're like, oh, we'll put some music in, we don't need to worry about anything else except for the speaker. Well, creativity can do more than just music, but it's such an interesting space of just, like, just people don't really fully understand it yet, I don't think.
And it's not just a church thing. Like, the reality is that our culturally in this country, and I think in other countries as well, the arts are not valued in the way that they ought to be in a lot of spaces. In some spaces they are. But I mean, even, I mean, we can, this might end up being a tangent, but like we can talk about things like Spotify and like artists trying to make money from their work when they're earning, I think it's 0.05 of a cent at the moment per stream. And the CEO of Spotify, I can't remember his name, earns buckets of money every year.
Yeah.
Like, what, you know, on the one hand, immediacy is great because people can listen to your music wherever. But on the other hand, they're not buying records anymore. They're not buying CDs. COVID has made ticket sales. I mean, it's starting to become a little bit of an uptick now, but like ticket sales have been dead for 2-3 years. So it's not just a church thing. I think like just for artists to, and I'm not saying artists need to sell their soul for buckets of money, but they need to earn a living. And it's, and in the culture that we live in, often that isn't seen as something that other people who value that art sometimes most out of a whole bunch of other things in their lives still don't see the value in paying for, or at the very least seeing it as something that is worth paying for. And that, I think that's, that is part of where that has sort of bled into the church as well. And it doesn't help that we just expect that there's music.
And I think because of the nature of music, in that it is coming from a space of, you know, it's just it's a more freer, breathable space. So, and people are just used to it always being there for them, right? It's always been a thing that is for free to you. You hear it with your ears. You know, it's just, it is so much a part of people's human experience that I think they find it hard to separate that they would ever need to pay for this. But I would then go back to, that is how vital this is to humanity, that it's almost so much a part of our experience on this planet that people actually find it hard to separate it. And I think when it comes to church, it's the same thing. It's like, that's where that culture starts to, because I think they think we love doing it, so therefore, you know, you should love doing a few songs for this thing, you know. We'll give you a break, give you a go, like that sort of attitude of like, you know. There's not that same level of that sort of respect around that stuff. But I also think in our church in particular, it's because this is such a new thing for the United Church, I think. It hasn't really experienced what creativity can do because there's never been space to do it. So it's in that interesting space of like, I feel like some of the things that we're doing, people are kind of going, that's actually working, or that energy is actually bringing new life into this space, you know. And some of those things, we're on the way of kind of going, well, imagine that times, you know, imagine that bigger and bigger in the way that we kind of are moving in our different church spaces. Like, those are the things that need to come before the conversations. Before, you know, conversations about mission and all that stuff, you need to actually let it breathe so that people have a moment to kind of, get out of their heads. Because that's where the answers are, I think. I think we spend too much time, in the books, and we need to start like looking up and around and getting more into our bodies and our spirit and our soul.
The minister at my church gave a really great sermon a few weeks ago about like, well, we always think about church as a spiritual or a theological or a intellectual experience. We've stopped thinking about church as an experiential thing. Let's stimulate, you know, our intellect, let's stimulate ourselves theologically. What about the physical and emotional experience of going to church and taking part in a communal thing?
Yes.
I think that plays into that. Because the other thing is, like, creativity is spurred on and fueled by creativity.
Yeah.
I love the experience of watching a movie and I go, I didn't know you could make movies like that. I now want to write a movie.
Yeah.
For example, or I go to a show and go, I had no idea that was something that you were allowed to do with just two guitars, drums, bass, and vocals. I'm now going to try and implement that at church. Like there's when people aren't allowed to flex creatively, it stops more creativity from happening. And so it's this run-on effect and this chain that happens. And until we're allowed to just be freely creative in space. But the problem is if we're being treated as if it's just a little add-on at the end, then we don't have the time. And especially if we're being cut off from doing sound check because the speaker has to. like, how is that encouraging creativity?
Doesn't lend itself to innovation there. But,
yeah. Exactly.
But you're so right. Like, that whole thing of like, where are the spaces where we're watching the things and we're being inspired to do more things? Like, we're just, as creative people, we don't see it because we're often in it and we're having to do it. In a labored way, I would say. Whereas, you know, if our church or the church is ever going to evolve and transform, then that we need more of us because this is actually the gift that we bring. And sometimes I think it can be intimidating, like that whole energy can be intimidating sometimes because it's much easier to plan out strategy and be like tick box, you know, we're moving forward or we've done these workshops and we've got these courses and everything should be moving along and it's not. And I just, there's nothing wrong with those things. I think they absolutely have a part to play in this, but because of our lack of creativity, we're just not seeing that raw organic kind of like coming from, you know, like when something stirs from the ground up, from the roots up, we don't have a lot of that. And often if something does stir, it's very quickly stomped out, you know.
Well, that's the thing. Like new ideas, in my experience, are treated with suspicion or like,
yes.
What the heck is this? Stop that. Like that's not a response. I love the example of, I don't know if it's still a thing, but I think it was in Finland. There was a death metal church. Not because, I mean, I am a death metal fan, but like it's the reason that there is a death metal church in Finland isn't because they thought, wouldn't it be cool if we did church but death metal? It was because there is a community of people for whom death metal is the Charlie XCX of, like, that's the pop music of that, of their culture, and that's what they congregate around socially and they listen to in their own homes. Like that's just part of their culture, and so naturally the way that they express themselves in worship is in that way, through that form. And so when you have groups of people congregating together within cultural spaces that are different to whatever the normal quote unquote experience of church in the Uniting Church has become, when congregations go, actually, we want to express faith and worship in this way, it's like, whoa, 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 what are you doing? In my experience, it's been, that's a bit weird. Can we do that for 1 week?
Let's try it.
That's not an option. So that's a cultural thing as well. And I think it's also, hard to admit, but I do think it's worth addressing, is that it's also a generational thing. It's also like a lot of people that have been in the Uniting Church for X number of years, their understanding of what a vibrant church looks like came out of things like the Billy Graham revolution. There isn't going to be another, within the immediate future, I can't see there being another similar thing that's going to generate this massive influx of people into the church. Like that's just not going to happen. That's not where our culture is.
I can't even imagine there ever being another kind of mega church kind of a thing. Can you? Like, it just seems really, it's like the ones that are now, that's sort of like it.
That's it, yeah.
And then the rest, the things to follow have to you know, they have to transform, because I don't know, I just don't think that that's something that people really, really want to create anymore. Like, it's, yeah, things are changing so quickly.
Yeah, and when the cultural understanding of what church is stuck in 15, 20, 30, 40 years ago, like that paradigm, the people that in theory are going to be the ones that will drive the church forwards into the next 20 years of expressions of faith in the Uniting Church, they're not being allowed to try those things out because we're still trying to make the church work within this box that we've created of what church is in the Uniting Church.
Yeah.
Which is really frustrating. Really frustrating. And there are spaces where that is being happen. And I'm not saying it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But that is the reality of if the church is going to move forward, then you've got to hand the keys over at some point.
Yeah. And I like, even those things, I'm just like, we just don't most of the things that we talk about, remember how we're talking about the beginning and the end? Like, yeah. There's never any in those transitional spaces. Like when you say, oh, you've got to hand this over at some point. Well, that's never going to happen. But those transitional conversations that we have not been able to articulate well, I don't think. So there is this push and pull going on. You know what I mean? Like, but no one really wants to let go. And so I just feel like there needs to be something else that comes into the middle of those things. And because we don't have enough creative energy, I think that's hard. Because it is the creative energy that kind of tends to come in, weave through those spaces and pulls people's attention to something else, you know? And then when people look up to those things or wherever it is, those are those revelation, you know, moments where they start to go, oh, okay, that's something I can get on board with. I can let this property go, or I can let, you know, there's that lack of, like, we're just not in this together, really, at the end of the day. Everyone's holding on to their piece pretty tightly.
Yeah, I do have thoughts about what structurally what our church will look like in the next 15, even 10 years, I think. Because I do think that I think resources are just stretched way too thin. And there's just so many congregations that are burnt out and stretched thin. And I do think we'll start to see, my hunch is we'll see congregations, the number of congregations drop, but attendance and resources start to pull and grow a little bit more sustainable, I think. Well, we'll see what happens. I think that would help and start to make progress on some of these things we were talking about, you know, about resourcing creatives and creating spaces where congregations are allowed to experiment and try things without church councils looking over their shoulders and going, that's not how we do things, you know?
Yeah.
And it's about the community of people that are gathering.
Yeah, you know? Like, 100%.
At some point, we've got to start with people that actually want to gather, not let's start something in the hope that people are just going to wander in off the street. Like, that whole thing needs to just be put to bed. That is never, ever going to happen unless you've got something really cool going on and people are drawn in by music or something like that. But really, we do need to create spaces of where people are already there wanting to do something together, you know.
It's kind of a no-brainer sometimes. But
I remember I was probably like 18 or 19 maybe. Like, I was I'm just starting to figure out who I was as an adult in the church, and I went to this conference. And there was a line that I don't even remember who said it, but they were like, when you are thinking about vision and planning and coming up with cool things for church, you have to understand, you can't sidestep this, that you are competing with a Sunday evening with your mates at the pub, or Sunday evening in bed watching TV. Like, who wouldn't want to do that instead of go to church?
Yeah.
And you have to recognize that, because the reality of that is that you're not just going to pull random people out of those things to come to church, especially when the church carries as much baggage as it does for so many people.
Yeah.
And so you're absolutely right. It has to come out of genuine desire for connection and community.
Yes.
Otherwise, you're just trying to drag people into something that they don't want to go to.
Well, yeah, or really, really, really doing the work and the discernment around what is it that people are really wanting to go to. Like, for me, I think of myself, like what you're saying, you know, going to the pub, having a drink with friends, what would be something that would pull me over here to this space? And I there are things that I would choose over doing that with friends. But it's just that it doesn't really exist yet. I just think people are really looking for places to rest. Like, you know, what I guess the old school church model probably was for some. I think we haven't got that model right yet, but yeah, a place where people can come, but they don't, there's not the baggage of the church there with all the other stuff, you know, like people want to come and bring family members and have a space where they can kind of like, you know, bring all their worries and their concerns, or they might be sick, or they, you know, like the old days where people would go to church because they want healing. I mean, I actually think that's still something that's alive in our community, except we haven't figured out how to do that well and do that safely, or create spaces where that is something that people can just come in and participate in without being signed up to a roster or having to sit there with all of the church announcements and all of the feeling like they've already, you know, signed their life away before they've even gotten a prayer, you know, or support, you know. I just think, I always think of really lonely people.
I was going to say, like, loneliness, that's one of the
I just think whenever I get a bit like, oh, what are we doing? And every now and then you just might meet someone that tells you a story or something, or you might see someone, and it just puts it all into place around why we do these things. And at the end of the day, it's like, gosh, there's so many people that need community, you know, just want to be part of something and, you know, have a witness to their life and do life together. Gosh, like if we could just do that, you know, like, that's what it's all about.
And it's not like it's a community that you have to tick something. Like you're not having a fishing club, you got to go fishing. No, just come and be part of the community. There's no expectation in a healthy congregation, a healthy community. There's no expectation who you are, and you don't need to hide or twist or fold over or do things to your identity to fit what the community is asking of you. No. You're just welcome to come and be a part of the community. There's nothing required of you. And I think that is such a great, amazing thing, life-giving thing for so many people that just and we're stopping that from happening by forcing church to fit in all of these preconceived like what it has to be.
Yeah, or we're saying that we're those things, but we're not when people come in. And I've experienced that many times. Like, you know, you think you're going somewhere and you're expecting to be welcomed somewhat. It's just, I don't know. I think when we talk about being that place for people, we also have to start thinking about how do we care for people? It's not just the minister's job. When people come in the door, like, do we genuinely want to actually welcome new people? Because a lot of the time we say that, but then when people come in, we may not have the energy for them in that moment, or there's a million things that could be in the way of that. And again, we're losing people because we're not ready. You know, we're not ready to actually get alongside people.
Yeah, and it's a pretty common thing that I think people go to church with this expectation that it's like a subscription that they're signing up for, and like it's the minister's job to do that thing. Well, I think in churches that are really vibrant and that exhibit those things we were talking about, everyone takes part. Takes part. And, you know, some weeks you're not going to be in the mood. You're going to be busy. You're going to be tired. You're going to whatever. That's why it's a community, because there's space for you there, and it's like water. It just flows and fills those gaps. But when you've got a bunch of people turning up to take the thing that they've signed up for, and then they're going to leave again.
Yeah.
Which I isn't all churches, but like that can happen, and that's not necessarily a fault on those people. It's just that is sometimes how we can slip back into that understanding of what church is and what we church.
Yeah.
This is just something we turn up to and take, and then we leave.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, and I think often we talk about, we talk too much about church and we don't talk enough about people. Mm. And I call myself up for that because when you're in that world, you're always talking about church, mission. And you get about the people part. But when the people part come in, I think sometimes we've forgotten what that bit's about. Like, you know, it's just, and you can see it sometimes in, you know, I've watched it from a distance going, okay, this is a church that has said that they are this. They are wanting to be this. This is their mission plan. These are the values, blah, blah, blah. And then you see people coming in. And then that this just keeps going as normal. And these people are like, what? Hello, and I'm going, you know what you said, you know what you were saying that you wanted to do? Well, here's the opportunity right here. And they have no idea, they're not even paying attention because they're so busy just trying to do the church bit and they've forgotten about the people part. That's why we're not creating spaces that people want to come, really, because it's like, everyone's on survival mode trying to keep this church bit going, and it's like all we have to do is really figure out what people want to be part of, and how do we bring faith and spirituality into that space, you know? Yeah,
and it's
not all the answers.
So what's next for you? I know there's a bit happening next year for you with your role. Mm-hmm. What's on the horizon? What can we look forward to?
Next is so with some of the Creative Collective people, we'll be beginning to do an album next year, of which people have been writing different things for that all the way through this year. So we're starting to record now with one group. We've probably got about 15 to 20 churches that will all kind of contribute a song, and we're going to come alongside them and capture the story of that and do like little deep dives into the songwriter or the artist or the worship team's story around that. And all of these things really is to, I guess, create more awareness, and it kind of flows into all of the things that we've been saying about the culture in the space. How do we shift that culture? How do we start encouraging people to look beyond the musician or beyond, you know, the singer at the front? Like, these are people. They have a story, you know, and all the things that are coming out of that space is, I think, stories that we really need to hear. So that will be a lot of next year. And, I want to do some of – I want to get back to some of my own music. I feel like I'm too in the church at the moment. Sometimes I forget about, like, I'm a separate artist as well. So I'm hoping next year to maybe do some stuff of my own, maybe do a few concerts here and there, or I don't know. Just do something healthy. That's better life than this. Do some travel maybe as well. So I think it's a good idea.
Absolutely. That sounds exciting. I'm looking forward to seeing all those. Save me a ticket. I'll come watch you.
Sold out.
Yeah.
No, only one seat, but that's okay. We should do them together. That'd be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Get a band going.
Yeah. Thanks so much for joining. We've been going for a little while. Too much of your time. been a fantastic guest. We'll definitely have you back again.
You.
Whenever you want, you're more than welcome back on the show. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. It's been great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Anytime. We'll see you next week.
See you, Brian.
Thanks for listening. If you're interested, there'll be links down below to some of Tasha's music on Spotify. If you like this podcast, you can support us by leaving a 5-star review for the show on your chosen podcast platform. This really helps us to cut through to audiences more efficiently and helps us to get the algorithm a little bit more on our side to suggest our show to new listeners. Honestly though, the best way that you can support this show is just by telling your friends about it. So if there's someone in your life who you think would enjoy listening to the show, take this as your prompt to go and tell them about it. You can find us on socials, or you can get in touch more directly by emailing us at filthyhopepod@gmail.com. That's all for this week, and we'll see you again very soon. But until then, always remember, take Jesus seriously and don't be a dick.